welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Shalom, shalom. The peace of God be with you. Today we turn from Jeremiah to another prophet, Nahum. I know we haven't finished the book of Jeremiah yet, but we're going to finish up what he did in the 620s. It seems that his influence was pretty good, because in 627 he prophesied all kinds of oracles of woe against Judah and threats of punishment and doom. But then just a few years later, in the year 622 or 621, a reform was brought in by King Josiah when the book of Deuteronomy was discovered in the temple. And King Josiah did many of the reforms of the book of Deuteronomy, such as Jeremiah wanted. So, while King Josiah is reforming the religion of Judah, Jeremiah becomes quiet, and he'll stay quiet for quite a number of years. We'll get back to him in later episodes, but for now he's quiet. And other events are taking place that are important now for prophecy. I've mentioned a number of times that in 627, Ashurbanipal died, and he was succeeded by his son, Shisharakun. And his son, Shisharakun, could not hold together the empire, because the Babylonians made an alliance with the Medes. The king of the Babylonians was Nabopolassar. And Nabopolassar started to move up from the south and attack the Assyrians. And then the king of the Medes, Cyaxares, came down from the north and attacked again and again and again. And with this pincher movement from southern Babylonians and northern Medes, the kingdom of Assyria began to fall. First of all, in the year 614, the ancient capital, Ashur, fell to the combination of Babylonians and Medes. And then in 612, the city of Nineveh itself fell to the alliance against Assyria. Now, this prepares the way for understanding the prophecy of Nahum, or Nahum is an H in English, but it's a H sound to it. Got to have a lot of spit when you speak Hebrew. Nahum is a prophet. He's the only prophet whose book is called a book. No other prophetic book is called a book in Hebrew. Okay, the Hebrew text says, the burden of Nineveh, the book of the vision of Nahum. And the word Nahum means full of comfort or mercy, but comfort, comfort. And all that we know about him is that he comes from the city of Elkosh. Don't know much more about it. Now, this, first of all, starts off as an alphabetic poem in Hebrew, of course, that the first word of each line is a letter of the Hebrew alphabet in succession. And it goes right on down, L and B and so on. But the thing that we have to realize is that it ends after it gets to the letter K. So it's not a complete acrostic. An acrostic is a poem that starts off with each letter of the alphabet, like Psalm 119 does, for instance. But it's a partial acrostic, and the important thing is not just its structure, but rather also its message, which is how Yahweh is marching against the city of Nineveh. Yahweh himself will punish Nineveh. So let's see what he's got to say here. Yahweh is jealous and avenging God. Avenging is Yahweh, and he is a master of wrath. Now that's just a rich image. As a matter of fact, this prophet Nahum is a great poet. He calls Yahweh the master of wrath. He knows how to take care of wrath, and he's going to punish Nineveh. Yahweh is vengeful to his opponents. And he holds on to wrath for his enemies. Yahweh is long-suffering. He takes a long time, you know, for his anger. But he is great in power. And when he does come up, look out. You're in trouble. And that's the way it is with these people of Nineveh. For by no means and no way will Yahweh clear the guilty. Yahweh comes in a whirlwind, in a tornado. You think that Mr. Clean guy is something in that commercial, huh? Well, he cleans up the house. Yahweh comes to clean you up. He's that kind of a tempest. And clouds are the dust of his feet. He hollers at the sea, and he makes it dry. Just like he did when he brought the people of Israel out of Egypt. He dries up all the rivers, like he did with the Jordan. Bashan and Carmel languish. Bashan is over on the east side of the Sea of Galilee, what we call the Golan Heights now. Carmel is on the other side, the west, right on the Mediterranean coast. And both are usually very green, but if Yahweh says, you're dried up, baby, then that's what happens to them. And the flower of Lebanon just is sorrowful. It also withers. The mountains shake, the hills melt, the earth is upheaved, the world and all that dwell in it is all shaken up. Notice these are the powers of the earth. Mountains, hills, the earth itself, the world. And all these powers shake when Yahweh arrives. Who can stand before Yahweh's indignation? And who can hide in the fierceness of his anger? His fury is poured out like fire, and rocks break before him. So that all this stuff is frightening and scary. So, oh, scary kids, Yahweh's coming along, very scary. But then verse 7 says, but Yahweh is good, a stronghold in the day of trouble. He knows those that take refuge in him. This is an important thing. One of my favorite novels is a children's novel, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe by C.S. Lewis. And there it describes this lion, Aslan, who is symbolizing Christ. And they say, is he safe, lion? He said, of course he's not safe. Of course God isn't safe. He's dangerous. But he's good. And that's what Nahum says here. He's good. For he comes not with safety here, but he comes with an overflowing flood. And he makes an end of a place, and darkness pursues his enemies. But it's his enemies that experience this, not his friends. So, what do you, that is you people of Nineveh, what do you plan against Yahweh? He will just end it completely. He will make a full end. Trouble will not come up a second time. Why not? Because Yahweh destroyed you once and for all. The people, for instance, who go to hell, they are not going to be able to do any more damage after they're there. They're done with. They don't rise up a second time for another chance. Even though they are tangled and twisted like thorns, even though they are drunk, they shall be devoured like stubble. Even though they cause lots of trouble here on earth, they shall be burned up like chaff or stubble. And then in verse 11, he speaks again, out of you, Nineveh, he comes forth. Now, the he refers to the strong generals that came out of Nineveh, like Ashurbanipal and the other great kings. And those who devise evil against Yahweh, they came out of you, Nineveh, those who counsel wickedness. We're going through the prophet Nahum and his oracles against Nineveh. And now he's about to address the great king that comes out of Nineveh to destroy, the great king who plots against Yahweh. And keep in mind that the people of Nineveh and Assyria were known throughout the ancient world as the most vicious and meanest and most ornery people that you can imagine. And they were known as sort of the Nazis of their day. They weren't known as that, of course. We would call them that. They didn't have Nazis then, but they were like the Nazis of the day. Everybody hated them. And now Yahweh speaks, beginning in chapter 1, verse 12. See, the first 11 verses, first 10 verses describe Yahweh. Then the king of Assyria is described, and he's sort of arraigned before Yahweh for what his punishment's going to be. Now Yahweh speaks in verse 12 and following. Thus says Yahweh, even though they come in full strength, then that they're many. Even so, they shall be cut down. You shall pass away. And even though I've afflicted you, I'll afflict you no more. Okay, now that's confusing. Let's take it apart. No matter how many and how strong the Assyrians are, he shall be cut down. In other words, I don't care how big your army is. I, Yahweh, will take care of you. And then he speaks to the people of Jerusalem and Judah, and even though I afflicted you, Judah and Jerusalem, I will afflict you no more. I will break his yoke from off of you. That is, I will take off the yoke of Assyria from you, Judah, and I will burst your bonds in half. That is, I will take away your slavery from the Assyrians. Because the kingdom of Judah had become part of the empire of Assyria, and they were servants to the Assyrians, and now that will be taken away from them. He says, and Yahweh has given commandment concerning you, that no more of your name shall be sown, and out of your house your God I will cut off. Your graven image and molten image, I will make your grave, for you I have become worthless. Now again he's speaking in verse 14 to Assyria itself, saying that the commandment concerning Assyria is that your name will no longer be sown. That is, you will no longer have children who pass on your name. You have no seed coming after you. And I will cut off your gods from your house, and all the images and idols will be destroyed. And as a matter of fact, that happened, hasn't it? And the only reason we know about the idols of Assyria anymore is because the archaeologists have gone to dig them up out of the ruins. But Nineveh is still a ruin. So is the city of Ashur. And all the cities of the Assyrians are ruins. And then, all of a sudden, because this good news that finally, the Assyrians are going to be destroyed. It's just like, you know, people in the world, you know, experience great joy. I've seen the movies, because I'm too young, but I saw the movies of the news of Victory in Europe Day, VE Day. How people rejoice, the Nazis are finally wiped out and destroyed. Well, now the people of Judah also rejoice. And they say here, behold upon the mountains the feet of him that bring good news, that announce peace. Keep your feasts, O Judah, perform your vows, for the wicked man one shall no longer pass through you. Now, what I'd like to do is play a song based on that. There's a Hebrew song taking this verse, which also shows up in the prophet Isaiah, and it goes like this. Manavu al hei harim tragalei ha mevaseher. Manavu al hei harim ragalei ha mevaseher. Mashemiya hayeshua mashemiya shalom. Mashemiya hayeshua mashemiya shalom. This song means, how lovely on the feet of the mountains are those who bring good news, the good news of victory and peace. And it will be victory over the Assyrian oppressors and peace after they're gone. That was the hope. And, you know, we can rejoice in good news of the victory of Christ over our sins. And the peace that he brings into our hearts. So we can still sing that song of how lovely on the mountains are the feet of those who bring good news. As a matter of fact, St. Paul quotes from that in the letter to the Romans, chapter 10. And he goes on here to say, now going back to the Assyrians, a scatterer has come up before your face. Guard the defenses. Watch the way. Strengthen your loins. That is, you know, get your guts ready. Come on, toughen up, buddy. Fortify your power mightily. For Yahweh restores the pride of Jacob and also the pride of Israel. For the emptiers have emptied them out and they have destroyed their vine branches. And what's that all mean? Remember, in 721 B.C., the Assyrians, first under Shalmaneser V and secondly under Sargon II, came and wiped out the northern kingdom of Israel. They destroyed the capital city of Samaria. They took the people captive and dispersed them all over the world. And now the Lord is saying to those captives who are hearing this good news of victory and of peace all over the mountains, good news that Assyria could be destroyed, These people are now to come back home. They're to toughen up, get strong, and walk back to Israel. They'll be able to resettle the land. And the emptiers have been emptied out. That means the ones who emptied out the land of Israel, those who took all the people out of Israel and emptied it of people, will themselves now be emptied. That is, the Assyrians who took the exiles away from Israel will now themselves be kicked out of Israel. So all you Israelites, come back home. That's what Nahum, whose name means the comforter, means. And then, the next thing that he describes is a great battle against Nineveh. And it says here in this final battle, beginning in chapter 2, verse 4, the shield of his mighty men is made red, and his warriors are in scarlet. Why is it red? Because they like the color red? They got nice red clothes or nice sail on red bolting of cloth? No. They're going to be red because of their blood, Assyrian blood on their own clothes. The chariots are fire of steel in David's preparation, and the cypress spears quiver. The chariots rush madly in the streets. They bump each other. They're traffic jams of chariots trying to run in and conquer the city of Ashur and the city of Nineveh. And the appearance of them is like torches. They run to and fro like lightnings. That is, this is a description of the whole destruction of the city. And he thinks about the ones who are great, his great ones, but they stumble when they march. They run to the wall, and it's all prepared, but they're going to fall. In other words, he describes this battle with this hurrying and scurrying and running around, but Nineveh cannot save itself. It's doomed. Yahweh has declared it. And the final battle against Nineveh will wipe it out because of its injustice. We're going through the prophet Nahum and his description of the destruction of Nineveh. Nineveh, which deserved this destruction because the people, they were so violent and so compulsive in their destruction of other nations that now they themselves will finally be destroyed. In chapter 2, verses 7 through 11, we see a description of what happened when the enemy army comes into the city of Nineveh. The gates of the rivers are opened and the palace is dissolved. There were floodgates along the river Euphrates that were next to the city of Nineveh. And these are opened up and floods come in. You might remember in history how Hitler did the same thing to prevent the taking of Berlin. He had the subways of Berlin flooded so the armies of the Russians couldn't come in. He ended up killing many of his own people at the same time. But when the flood comes in, the palace is destroyed. The queen is uncovered. That is, she's made naked. Now this is the queen who had the best clothes in the whole world. Now she is made naked because she's taken by the enemy. She's carried away. Her handmaids moan like the voice of doves, and they beat their breasts. Remember, we've talked about that before with other prophets where their breasts are made naked in Isaiah, and they beat on their naked breasts as a sign of mourning, okay? And they'd scratch them and things like that. He says, Nineveh has been from an old time like a pool of water. That is, it was calm, like a pond. And nobody bothered Nineveh for a long time, for hundreds of years. Nobody bothered Nineveh because it was so strong and so calm. But now they flee away. They say, stand, stand, stop, don't run away. But nobody looks back because they're all running. They're all terrified. Take the spoil of silver. Take its gold. There's no end to the store, rich with all kinds of precious cups and chalices and all these other gold ornaments. Now she is empty and void and waste. And the hearts melt. And the knees knock together. They get all kind of knock-kneed and scared. And in their loins, inside themselves, everything is in turmoil. Their whole bowels are up in an uproar. And like I've mentioned in one other show, women who are waiting to go into the gas chambers at Treblinka used to defecate because they were so frightened. And so also is this going on with these people. That's how scared they are. And we use expressions similar, reflecting that level of fright, that even your bowels are all in disorder, as a way to describe extreme fear. And everybody's faces become dark. Then we see in verse 12 and 13 a couple of questions that are rhetorical questions, where it says about Nineveh, sort of mocking it. It says, where is the den of lions? Where is the feeding place of the young lions? Where the lion and the lioness walked, and the lions dwelt, and none made them afraid. Remember, we've seen pictures before of how there was a park for the king of Babylon who would chase lions around, okay? And he said, where is that now? And wasn't Nineveh called the den of lions itself? And that his king was stronger than lions, so he would kill them? Well, it's no more. Nineveh is destroyed, as happened in the year 612. The lion who tore in pieces and gave enough for all his whelps, that is, for his young lions, and he strangled enough for his lionesses, and has filled his caves with prey and his den with food. But now, that is, the lion is the king of Assyria. He's gone. He's nothing. He's nobody. They have nothing left. Nineveh is destroyed. It's not a lion's den. It's a place for jackals and ostriches. And he talks about this great desolation that will come upon them in verse 14. Yahweh says, behold, I am against you, says Yahweh of hosts, Yahweh Sabaoth. I will burn her chariots in the smoke, and the sword shall devour your young lions. Because they had this park or zoo with lions, and they'll all be killed. I will cut off your prey from the earth, and the voice of your messengers shall no longer be heard. Because your empire will be destroyed, your messengers won't go from one city to another. That won't happen to you anymore, Nineveh. Now chapter 3 is a change. In verses 1 through 7 we see a woe oracle. That is a funeral lament over Nineveh. Because Nineveh is dead. And it says, woe to the city of bloods. That's what it says literally in Hebrew. And city of bloods means a city of bloodshed, a city of murder and violence. It is all full of lies and stealing, but the prey does not depart. Listen, the whip, listen, the rattling of wheels, the prancing of horses, the running of chariots. In other words, listen, Nineveh, you're dying. Can't you hear how the enemy Babylonians and Medes are whipping their horses, they're whipping their chariots, and they're careening all through your streets, Nineveh, and all through your towns to destroy them. The horseman charges, the sword flashes, the spear glitters, the multitude of slain and a heap of carcasses. See, the Assyrians used to take their enemies and pile up the heads of the enemies and keep on killing enemies until they had a pile of heads that reached to the city gates of the enemy cities. Now, there's a pile of carcasses of Assyrians. What they used to do is done to them. The crime and the punishment fit each other. There's no end of corpses. They stumble upon the corpses. Because of the multitude of the harlotries or the well-favored harlot, the mistress of witchcrafts. That is, he compares Assyria to a harlot very much like the prophet Jeremiah had done. And he calls her mistress of witchcrafts. As a matter of fact, the demon god Pazuzu was worshipped a lot, and little statues of Pazuzu, the demon god of Assyria, was put by all the babies to protect them from the demons. So they're known for their witchcraft. And it sells nations through her harlotries and families through her witchcraft. Behold, I am against you, says Yahweh of hosts. I will lift up your skirts over your face. Now, if a woman takes her skirt and puts it over her face, that means her genitals are exposed. And this was a sign of complete shame. And I'll show the nations your nakedness and kingdoms, your shame. I will cast detestable things upon you and make you vile. I'll make you like dung. And they shall come to pass, and all that look upon you shall flee from you and say, Nineveh is laid waste. Who will bemoan her? When I seek comfort, where will I seek comforters for you? Nowhere. Nowhere. Because there's no one who will comfort Nineveh. You are better than no Ammon. Now that refers to the capture of Thebes. And I have a slide, a photograph, of an Assyrian wall carving where the Assyrian army is attacking the city of Thebes. You can see it on your screen now. The Assyrians are going up to attack the city of Thebes, and And now the same destruction will come upon the city of Nineveh, that they will be destroyed by the power of the word of Yahweh spoken through Nahum. And sure enough, in 612 BC, they were wiped out by Babylon and Mede together.
Have mercy on me.